Emmett Ott has a colorful way with words, and he has some strong convictions. Born near where he lives still, outside of Princeton, Emmett worked for many years with saws in the Potlatch Mill. Here he talks of early logging and mining, and some about milling and travel. He tells stories of certain attitudes of Potlatch forest management that got them into trouble, and he explains our foreign relations by a story about the relations between a coyote and a dog.
Well, he
but
was.
They made a whole crowd went there to see him, like you never guess. There was thousands of people from all over Idaho in Troy that day, just because Bertinelle French was going to be there to make a speech. And he was just a congressman. If Nixon had come over there today, I think everybody would leave town. Everybody would pull out.
But today they sure would.
So, but that's the difference. I guess, you know, he was just a congressman. But boy, he come out there, you know, and everybody, why he was royalty, you know. Everybody just admired him, you know. And, oh boy, if a congressman come out here in this country today, there wouldn't probably be anybody turn off the road to go see him. That's the difference in the way government is today.
Did they listen to what he said? Do you remember what he said?
Yeah, I forget now what he said. It's just, he was just another human being. He wasn't a Superman or nothing.
Well, I wonder if he talked about politics, or if he just talked about what a nice country it was.
Oh, he talked about himself and where he went to school here and different people he knew here. And he just talked rambling along, you know. But he was a local boy. Made good, and that was awful unusual to have a punk, you know, go from this neck of the woods back to Washington, D.C., you know. That was really out of this world. Pretty much all the people used to run the government was Eastern people them days. Of course, they always had their representatives from Idaho and Washington, all right, but I don't know, but it's just odd the way he come out here by then, and people out town of Troy were just lined up with people. He just walking on one of those feet around there. And he had a stand built out there and got up and made his speech. And I bet there was 5,000 people around there. Jeez. Oh, it must have been that many, if not more. But, old log schoolhouse over here at Princeton. Well, there's no school here at all now. They tore everything down. But originally, I started the school myself in that little old log schoolhouse. It's just a little
that's
one room.
Where you went? To school.
Over at Princeton.
I mean, that's where you went.
That's where I went my first year in that log house. But they was building in the other schoolhouse, a frame building. They was building, but they had the first two or three grades, I think, in school in that little log house. And I remember my first teacher was named Miss McCann. That was quite a day, that first day of school.
And what happened the first day of school?
Oh, They had the main building built. There's a whole school in the new school they built there. There's a whole school in it, but had a professor named Oakley Hall. He lived in Moscow. He lived there. He died a few years ago, but he was a professor in the upper grades. So I don't know. You remember them old desks? They had the iron frame down and had a hole about that big around right down so far from the floor. You remember them?
I think I've seen them.
Well, I didn't have nothing to do. So I sat there and I kept my foot working in that hole. So I finally got my whole foot through it. Then I couldn't get it out.
No kidding.
And school mom, she come and she twisted this way on my foot, and I guess she couldn't get my foot out of there. So finally she had to go and get the old professor, old Hall, to come out. Boy, he was mad the first day of school, you know. He was busy in there. He come a stomping in there. He grabbed my foot and he twisted this way, and it wasn't going. Finally, I took my shoe off, get my foot out. I tell you, I was just scared plumb. That man looked 10 foot tall.
Oh, boy.
He just scared me to death. The devil coming, that wouldn't scare me any worse. So that was my first day of school, that little log house.
Oh, man, that must have made a lasting impression.
Oh, it did. I'll never forget that. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of things happen around here, I guess. A lot of things went on around here in the early days. People won't believe nowadays. You know, you start telling things that happened, and they look at you like, oh, hell, you're way out yonder, you know. And, well, for instance, one winter, we had copious snowing level all over the valley here. More than that up in the woods. It's 4 feet of level, the fences all covered over. Well, then it rained. Got quite a shower. And then that night it turned loose and froze. And all froze across that thick on top of that 4 foot of snow. And they used to log. I don't know, you remember, you've seen them old big logging bobsleds. Big, what they call logging bunks. Well, they'd pile them up just like logging on them, just like they do these short truck logs. It's all the 60-foot logs, you know, they pile them up there. And they put 4 or 6 horses ahead of it and haul them down here to the river, and they'd dump them over here at the river, roll them over the bank, if they could, close the bank they could get, all up and down the river. Decks of logs over there. Every man had his certain spot to put a log. And of course, you had your logs branded. You know how they brand logs. Well, they got a
sledgehammer. With an iron?
Huh?
With an iron?
No, it's nine. It's a sledgehammer. And maybe your number would be O. Or it could be E, C, anything. But there'd be a C in the end of that hammer. And you go along and hit the end of the log with that hammer and then put that number there. That'd be your number. So when they went down the scale down to mill, why, you get credit for your log. And so, like I say, they was hauling them all up and down the river. But they had the main road run right down here below the barn. It just blew this barn mine. And went across that fat man place there, and they headed straight for the river. But when they that snow come and it got that deep and froze, well, they probably have 6 head of horses on them sleds. But if they wanted to land the logs way down yonder someplace, the road was over here, and they just swing them horses up on top of that, all that snow, and load a sled load of logs that go up on top of it, and they go over there on top of 4 feet of snow with a sled load of logs. 6 horses on it, never break through. That's kind of hard to believe. But they sure did it. And
well, how is it different with the all the ice, just because the ice cover they could...
How's that?
Just because of the ice cover they could...
crushed snow on it. You've seen crushed snow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what all it was. It just come rain on top of all that snow.
Uh-huh.
And it turned cold and froze.
Uh-huh.
And that froze so hard that, by a guy said, them horses and things go out on top of the snow, right over top of fences and everything. And, yeah, don't get winter like that no more. Haven't had a winter, I don't know, since we used to. Country's all changed. Every winter, they'd log up here, and they'd summer, they'd deck the logs up here. Hundreds of thousands of feet of logs would be decked up, just, you know what a deck of logs is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they'd be decked along the road. There'd be a big deck here and there. And they'd deck them all up in the summertime, and they'd wait for the snow to come. And then they'd haul them to the river. Then in the spring, when the high water come, they'd roll them in the river, and they could head off for pot patch. That's the way they got the log down at the mill. Float them down the river. And so that was a great time. People get...
Would you like a cup of coffee? Sure, thank you.
Yeah, and that's where they got the log down the mill. Oh, no, I've seen them up here by a guy from fall big trees on that crest that they have to dig down around the stump in order to leave your stump so high, you know. They'd dig down around it and then saw the tree down and fall over on that crest of snow. I know my dad did up here in the field up on the separate place up there. Falling big old pine trees down, you know, and they, of course, when they fell, they'd crush the snow. They'd get down and cut the limbs off as much as they could on except the bottom of it, and put a chain around it and put the horses out on top of the snow out there. They'd roll that log out of the bed that fell in up on top of the snow. And of course, my dad hauled them off of what they call a good devil. Just a two-runner rig. And just two runners with a bunk across it. and they didn't have a, usually just had a hole about so long there, about 5 or 6 feet long between the runners, and then a chain would run through that business and so that the runners could flex and go around the curve where one runner would take a head of the other and seesaw. The devils, they called them good devils. They was a devil.
Where would he be on the...
Well, he'd sit up on top of the log and drive his horses. In the wintertime, the logs were wet. They had
sit right on the logs?
Huh?
Sit right on the logs?
Well, no. Usually in the winter, in bad weather, they always had what they... gunny sacks full of straw. As they called them, dry asses. And they'd put that on the sit-ons, you know. Huh. Yeah, that's what they called them. The name of that damn sack was the dry ass. Well, they kept from getting wet. No, but they never failed. I never seen them fail to get all the logs in during the winter. Well, nowadays, you know, if you deck logs that way for snow to come, why, you never will get them in, you know. You probably will get one more, enough snow to get maybe one or two trips and the snow's gone.
Uh-huh.
We haven't had any snow here to sleigh ride on for years. Maybe a day or two, I've seen 10 inches, 12 inches, in a couple of days it's gone. That's all there was about to anymore.
Well, did they used to work all winter?
Well, they'd haul logs all winter, yeah. They'd work all summer getting them decked up in the hills. And then in the wintertime, where they'd wait for the snow to come, and then they'd start hauling logs and dumping them in the river. And I guess some places the snow wasn't too deep, they'd log in the wintertime, but mm-hmm. they usually figured on just cutting them in the summertime and decking them, and then hauling them in the winter. And they never failed to get them in. They always had enough snow to get them all in.
Hmm. So did the mill run all year round?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They had plenty to keep them going.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, they got to building the railroad further up. They built the railroad to Potlatch and Blue to start with. And that's when all this country was logged off by just hauling the river. And then floating them down the river. That's the way this country around here is all logged off. Well, then they built the railroad on up to Bova. And, they went to Harvard first. Then they went from Harvard on up the line to Bova with the railroad. And, of course, then they got to log and haul them in on the railroad. And they got the railroad in. They always load them on the railroad and haul them down.
You mean they stopped, they used that instead of the river?
Huh?
Instead of the river?
Well... Yeah, they done a lot of logging down here. They used to be a railroad. This road you come up on here from Brinton out?
Yeah.
Well, that was the old railroad bed. They had a spur running up here, run up the creek, and then go up different canyons. Oh, yeah, they used to run trains right up through this canyon up here.
Huh.
Yeah. Shays, they call them. Wasn't a real, what they call a shay. You know what a shay engine is? Well, it's they're not very big, but they're powerful. They'll go right uphill. Yeah, they go right up them canyons. They're got maybe 5 or 6, 6, 7 drivers on each side. And they got a rod running through. And the engine runs this rod, and the rod's got a worm gears in them.
Yeah.
And there's worm gear on every wheel. Every wheel on the track is a drive wheel. That's what they're,
I see.
Something like a Mallee, you know, old Mallees.
No,
they're,
never.
They're the same thing. Oh, yeah, the old Mallees, they used to use them to go over the Rocky Mountains.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what they... Well, they was using them old Mallees back then in 36. I know I was coming down through Wyoming, coming down off the, what they call the path going across there, what did they call that path going across the Rockies? Go through Laramie and up through there. You can go over the Rockies, not know you're going uphill, not going over a mountain. You ever been through that Lincoln Highway?
I don't know.
Well, you go from Ogden, Utah, and you go up to Evanston, Wyoming. And then all the way through Wyoming, you're going over the Rocky Mountains. But you can see for miles either way, you can't see a mountain. But you get up to Laramie, where you're something like 7,000 some feet high. I know I always had that bamboo question, but I got into Rawlins, Wyoming, and stopped and get gas. So I told that guy, I said, by gosh, they told me I left Utah this morning, I'd drive over the Rockies. I said, where the hell are they? I've been driving all day and I haven't seen the mountain yet. Man, he says, you're right on top of it. Great Divide, they call it. Uh-huh. Great Divide, going across the Rockies. Yeah, I said, I drove all day and I haven't seen a mountain yet. And he said, man, you're right on top of them. And it's something like 7,000 feet up.
Well, yeah. Here you got no trouble, you know, and you see it, at least it's either a hill or a mountain, but you see it, you know it's there.
Yeah, you can see mountains way off in distance. Up there, you know, you could be going along there, and there's only about 3 or 4 towns through Wyoming. You're Everton, and I think the next one is Green River, and I forget the next one. You come to Rollins, then Laramie, over 100 miles between towns. She's right out in the desert. We went through in the wintertime, and I went through there. And you could see a train way off, you know, over across the prairie there, and the Union Pacific runs through there. But you'd be going on the highway, and way the real train looked like a little toy train. You could see so far, and you could see that train just as plain, but little. It's just high altitude, I guess. The air is clear.
Did people from around here travel much when they were in the early days?
There's some of them, but there's a lot of them, 90% are traveling as far as Spokane and back. There's a few people get out and travel around. I've done no travel. I've been in California, back in Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado. I've been all through there, Montana. And a lot of people, of course, travel a lot more than that. See, a lot of my guys haven't been any further in Spokane away from the country either. About when I was a kid, was kind of a backward family named Knox. Knox lived up here, and two boys, one was Herb and the other Fred. They were grown men, but you look up there in ordinary time, I don't know whether they ever had any shoes or not, but they'd always run around there barefooted, you know. And so one day they were downtown, they all dressed up and had shoes on and everything. My guys don't know where they were going, all dressed up like that. My guys were going to Spokane to see them high buildings. And I don't think they had a building in Spokane over 6 stories high. They're going to see them tall buildings up there. They're going to see the world. Yeah, they're going to Spokane and see the world.
What happened to that family? Did they stick around?
Oh, no, there's none of them around here now. No. No, I don't know. The only one I know of now that lives, I guess he's still living, I don't know, but he was living in Lewiston. Last I heard of him.
They just poor? Just.
Oh, everybody was poor.
There were no poor?
Well, I guess. Anybody had $1,000 them day was a millionaire, so I don't know how poor you'd have to get, you know, to be considered poor.
But most kids wore shoes, though.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess they could, I don't know what was the idea. But they was the healthiest kids around the country. Boy, perhaps. Yeah, they was healthy.
I guess everybody's poor then.
Oh, yeah, there were some guys maybe had a little bit more than somebody else did, but then they always had their big shots around the country. Some guy got a couple dollars more than the other guy. The other guy had to bow to him. they run the country around here. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Tell me that. What you were telling me about Laird again, because that reminds me of Laird. When you ran into Laird.
Oh, Laird?
Yeah.
Oh, that was over here in Princeton. Yeah. Oh, he had a chauffeur. He had his private chauffeur. Fought by the name of Albert Utz. And he had his uniform on, you know, and he was a regular chauffeur. And all his job was to keep his car clean and gassed up, and just a regular chauffeur job. And when the boss wanted to go to Bovo, well, he'd drive him. He had a big Hudson Super 6, and it was a big car. And so that guy said, he'd come up the road, and that chauffeur hold the road, you know. The roads were just two lanes, you know, and if you find a place to turn out, you know, you couldn't just go by with another 60 mile an hour like you do now. You had to look for a place to turn out and let the car go by you. Well, by God, he'd just hold the road and put everybody out in the ditch or anything else where you had to get to keep them getting run over. Well, I was just a dumb kid. My dad had an old Beely car. It was new. No, it was an old make of Beely. You ever heard of them? Beely, B-E-L-A-E, Beely. And I made, there used to be a blue hall right there. You hit the highway. You cross the rail track, and I think they got an ice plant there now where they freeze meat. And then you hit the road, you go right down through town. Well, the road was wide. As wide as the street was. There's plenty of room, but there's actually just one road right down through town. Well, I turned that car to the old Beely, and I was way down at the other end of town. I see the car just throwing dust out to beat the devil. I knew that old Hudson. I made my mind I was going to give him the whole road. I'd give him half of it. So I put the two front wheels in one track, and he was coming right up the middle. And I just threw that old Beely wide open, and right down there, I met him right down there. You know where the post office is there, Brinson? Just used to be a slough. Right there, it's across the post office. Between that and the railroad track, it used to be a slough. It was full of water all summer long. You know, I used to skate on it when I was a kid in the wintertime. And anyway, I held my road on him, and he got right up there. I don't know, but all at once he seemed he going to have to give. Playing chicken, I guess you call it nowadays. And he gave, and he wound up over in that slough. He didn't upset or nothing, but he just plowed out there in that slough, and they stuck out there, and I kept it going. And I didn't really know how it happened until after I come back. Somebody told me, oh, Laird wound up out in that slough. Well, he had to get a team of horses, I guess, pull him out of it. And he canned his chauffeur right there. He never helped out to that. He drove all the time. He drove himself.
Huh.
Yeah. I sure broke that chauffeur from sucking eggs, so I could have got myself killed, too.
Boy. He ever knew that you did it?
No, I don't know why. If he did, I never found out. I never sure as hell told him. Because I worked down at the mill. He was superintendent down at the mill, you know. But I never told him. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. It's funny that a guy would do that, you know, that he'd, just because he's got the money.
Well, he was a big shot, you know. He'd walk down the streets of Potlatch and, you know, he wouldn't even see you. Wouldn't even look at the speaker or nothing. No, everybody's supposed to. Why, it'd been a crime to say hello, Mr. Laird, I guess. It'd been an insult. Oh, yeah. But he mellowed out, though, before he died. He got so he wasn't quite so. And they used to have dances down in the old gymnasium down there. And all the doctors and dentists and all the bosses around the mill, their wives, they'd all dress up and they'd have what they call a ball, you know. And they had a veranda up above where the common people, they go up there and you could go down on the floor and watch them dance. But you wouldn't dare go down and get on the floor with them. Hell, you wasn't allowed down there. You were just common people. Anyway, they kept that up till I was down there. I was up on the damn veranda with a bunch of them up there. And somebody got a hold of them stink bombs. And they threw them down on the floor. Well, you know what a stink bomb is. Well, anyway, broke up the dance. So anyway, I guess the high mucklemuts kind of got the message. And they never had one of them balls after that. That was the end of that. That put a stop to that ball business.
Did they try to find out who did that?
Oh, I guess old Laird, if he could have found out who done it, he just kept him. Nobody knew nothing.
Nobody knew.
Oh, it's like one time here, about 20 years ago. You know where Hampton is up there? Well, the railroad track comes up, and they had a little, damn little culvert for the water to go through, you know, from up above on the other side of the water, everything coming from Goldhill down. Had to go under the railroad track. Well, they just had a little culvert there that wouldn't carry the water, so every high water we'd have with that whole flat there between Princeton and Hampton was just a lake. And by gosh, you know, every time. So they tried to get Potlatch to build a bigger culvert down there and let that water go through. Well, they argued. it wasn't a culvert's fault. It was a river coming up and pushing the water back. Well, it sounded a bit logical, but... So one day, anyway, a bunch of guys, I don't know who it was, they got down there one day and they put a bunch of dynamite in that culvert and they just blowed that damn thing all the heck. And they notified the company because they always run the logger up there early the next morning. So they called in down at the railroad yard down there and told them that the culvert was out up there. So they brought the engine up the next morning and a couple of guys walked ahead of the engine till they come up before daylight, you know. They had their flashlights and they was walking up there and they finally come to it. And oh boy, what the heck was the guy, head of the railroad business down there? I can't think of his name. But he was up person inquiring around who done it, you know, nobody. Everybody, well, first everybody said, I did it. And everybody, they laughed. I did it. Well, cracks, you know. The whole town said, I did it. Well, I don't know who did do it. I never heard. I never did hear who did. I think I know who did it, but that's... The funny part was Floyd Layton lived up on that hill there, that big square house up there. It was on his place where the culvert was. And he was aggravated because he had a place where his cows run down here, you know, and it was all flooded all the time in high water. So anyway, he was awful nervous because it looked like if any guy would do it, why, it'd be him. But I don't think he had anything to do with it. But he was pretty nervous about it. And anyway, by guys, they was up there and they built a culvert now that carries the water. We haven't had any high water over the road since. So it was the culvert that's doing it.
Yeah.
Well, they got one down there now that carries the Mississippi River through there.
I guess they didn't want any more trouble.
So, anyway, oh, we had a lot of excitement around here at different times. Yeah. All potlatch, you know, they just like the United States was the world, you know. They could do anything they pleased. It's like old Nixon. Nobody could do anything about it because they had all the big lawyers, you know. You couldn't sue them. If you'd done damage, why, you couldn't sue them because they had their own lawyers and everything. And they pushed their weight around pretty strong. But like the United States has been doing the rest of the world. Any country don't do what the United States says, they send the Marines down there and shoot the hell out of them.
Well, that's right.
We kind of come to the end of the road on that, too.
I hope so.
Well, we ain't. I guess we don't dare to. It's like that Panama business they had down here a while back, you know. Heck, if it had been 10 years, 12 years ago, they'd have sent a bunch of Marines down there and kicked the hell out of them Panamanians, you know, teach them a lesson. They didn't do it this time.
Well, maybe we're starting to learn.
Maybe we're going to grow
yeah,
up.
Yeah, we're growing.
Yeah, we just... Yeah, maybe we... Oh, I don't know. Nixon going to China here, if I was all 6, 7 years ago at the most. Why, the communists were dirty. So everything you could hear was a dirty communist. You know, communists are the cause of all the troubles in the world. And, I told my wife one of these days was going to turn out this way. We used to live up here on the river above Princeton, up there in the place there. Used to be an old wagon road running through the brush, going up to the other place. There's kind of a shortcut through there. We had a little dog named Watch. We named him Watch. He's about 2/3 grown pup yet. And that dog would run alongside the wagon, and a coyote come down over the hill. And of course, the dog looked up and seen that coyote, so oh boy, take after the coyote broke and ran up the hill. Dog running up their way as we was riding along the old wagon there watching it. So the pup ran up the way and come back. Pretty quick the coyote come a little bit closer to the wagon. Pup took after him again. Coyote went a little further. Dog went further. So then the dog come back to the wagon. Coyote was back there. Oh, heck, he wasn't. Oh, twice as far as the television from the wagon, you know. And oh, the dog took after him and the coyote broke out and run like a devil. And that time the coyote dog chased his foot up the hill, but the coyote circled around and come back between the dog and the wagon. And so, this is the funniest thing on that. You see it talking about the expression or anything. The thing with an animal, they got much expression, but they have. And that pup looked up and he saw that coyote between him and the wagon, and so he didn't know what to do. Pretty quick he got down his belly and he started to crawl into the coyote to make up. He's gonna make up with that coyote. That old cat, you know, you can see how I'll fuck that dog with you, his tongue out and just laughing. So anyway, we had to stop the wagon, put a stop to that circus. That's what old Nixon done. By guys, he had to go to China, if you can't whip him, join him. So he went to Russia, and the communists, you don't hear much about it anymore, do you? No. Fact of the matter, Nixon says they're wonderful people. They're not dirty communists anymore, they're wonderful people. So, that's the way that dog was. And you got to where you can't go nowhere, well, then they're ready to make up.
I really agree with your description. I think that's the way it is.
Happened. My gosh, the United States is going to push their weight around. One of these days, they're going to have to do just like that dog. They're going to get themselves boxed in until that's what we're going to do, and so it happened. Yeah, it happened.
Well, you think Potlatch is going to get that way too? Have they already?
Well, they're on the end of the rope. They're going to put a little cedar mill in, but that's just a matter of time, and there won't be no mill down here. Yeah, it's all washed up. And unless they get some kind of different industry, they can. I don't know what it'd be on the lumber on the line. I don't know. It's pretty well all logged off around here, you know.
You think that's the real reason why Potlatch is closing down? Because all the lumber's really gone, or do you you think it's just that they want to make money?
This mill was losing money. It wasn't making money that they was making out of other mills, and it was kind of just like a man got several farms around. He got one by a guy that ain't producing. He'll peddle it. Same thing. They wanted to peddle this mill and kind of get out of it. It wasn't making money like some of the rest of them, so they wanted to phase it out. Yeah, I think that was it.
But how many people depend on that for their living?
About 250, I think, men working down the mill until June the 1st, then it shut down, you know. And then they're going to remodel the mill over down there. I don't exactly know what they're going to do to make dimensions that way. I understand 2x4s, 2x6s. They're going to put in a bunch of resaws. So anyway, they're laying off 140 men, the way I understand it. And of course, a lot of them already got different jobs. I know my son, he was working down there, and he's one of them going to be laid off. So he went over to Garfield and that Love outfit over there. He's working over there now. Their machine shop outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. Things change. Oh, no, we're getting short of timber. So that's no joke. No, they're bound to. Why, they hauled this mill, they hauled, I don't know, I've met Potlatch trucks way up the other side of Clarky, way back there. You ever been back in that country? Up the high country, they call it?
Yeah, I've been up the St. Joe and up near on the North Fork of the Clearwater some.
Yeah. You never been to Clarky and...
Yeah, I've been there, yeah.
And back in behind there, they got... Oh, I don't know what kind of Glover Creek and dying through there, and then go clear back to Bowles Cabins. That's all big country back there. Well, that pretty all logged off last time I was up there. And that's not far from the Montana line when you get back in there. They've just been pretty hauling logs from the Montana line clear down here at this mill in order to get logs. So you can see when they get that far back to the logs, well, it's getting pretty scarce. Especially when I was a kid. You can start right out here and about the end of civilization. Just big pine trees, big trees, birds and everything, all the way clear to Bowman. You just go through forest all the way up through there. You wouldn't believe it. But just what they call Forest Road, you know. Big timber all the way along the road, all the way clear to Bowman. And then on up to Elk River, same way. Now there's no timber up through there. You can go up through there now and you can't see a tree by a guy. A mule couldn't pull out. It's just logged off. So there's no question about it. There's shorter logs. And it's a question. The government stopped it. They curtailed it down. It's giving these mills all the logs they wanted all the time. A lot of guys are mad because they thought, well, they've been logged running for 10 years. It was supposed to let them log it all up, and then what you got? It's only a matter of time when they have to shut down anyway. When they run to saw the last tree down like they did the buffalo, you're out of buffaloes and you're out of logs. That's all there's to it. So I think the government's wise in doing what they did, curtailing it back. Yeah. Well, we got enough timber to keep this country going, but I don't know whether they can just keep us down boatload and boatload of lumber to Japan and all over the world like we've been doing all these times. We'd been like China, utilizing our raw material just for our own use, why we'd have had everything we needed for thousands of years.
But do you think that they would have been better off if they'd have regulated the timber cutting a long time ago? Would it have saved the timber?
Why, you go over in Germany, and they got the Black Forest over there, they got quite as much timber left back as we have. Looks a different when you started there. They cut a tree down, they have to plant too. And it's been going on for 1,000 years that way. They still got their forest. They didn't go and just slaughter it like we did. Just mutilate the forest, leave it and look. No, Germans come over here and see the way we logged this land off and the shape we left it in, they'd scream to high heaven.
Well, what did people think about it, though, back in the early days when...
They thought they'd have timber forever. Why, there was so much timber here that there wasn't enough saws to saw it all down in 1,000 years. Yeah, that's really, they just thought there was no end to timber.
Did you think that way yourself?
Yeah, I think so. Guys would go out by, guys and saw good trees down. And they didn't wasn't no mills around they could haul logs to. They just get them pushed up in piles, set fire to them just in order to get a few acres to farm. Just destroy the timber just to get a few acres to farm. No clue. Yeah, just timber didn't mean nothing. Lots of timber. Yeah. Oh, a lot of the land was cleared around here by guys that we just hauled off in piles and burnt just to get it off the land so they could farm it. Yeah. So, I don't know. Gold's coming back in now, and I'm getting to be quite an item again. And there's a lot of gold in that hill over here, what they call Gold Hill. There's a lot of gold there. I think somebody could find it. Because bound to be. Bound to be a lot of gold. Them creeks. Heck, even fine colors in all them creeks. One woman lived up there on Meadow Creek. Well, the Plouffe River, too. Used to run a bunch of chickens there, you know, just barnyard chickens. And every once in a while, she'd kill a chicken and get a couple nuggets of gold out of it down by the craw. No clue. Yeah. It just, but you go out there, you know, they don't know where the gold come from. And the mother lode is someplace, up there someplace, but they never found it. So all you can do is just placer mine, you know. You can go up to creeks and get a few nuggets out of there, you know. Same as old chicken, they go up there and scratch around them rocks and they can find a right piece of gold to eat. but nobody ever got rich on it. Not yet. To get a big outfit in there so they can just tunnel right through that mountain, you know. They'd find gold. Oh, I think what happened, you see there's two hills. They got the East Gold Hill and West Gold Hill, I think they call it. There's a saddle in between them. I think it was one big mountain at one time, and she blew it up. And I think that's the reason them gold's all scattered all over the creeks up there, and scattered all over. I think it just blowed out. Otherwise, how'd that gold get cleared out in them meadows down there up above Harvard there?
It was right in the meadows, huh?
Oh, yes. Well,
you didn't have to.
He's up in the mountains. No, it's down next to the Plouffe River. I fact, the meadows. There's a lot of gold right thinking about the Plouffe River. But anyway, that gold scattered. And there's a lot of gold there someplace nobody's ever found. There's been guys dug holes in the mountain up there and mined. But most of it, they'd get a hole back in there and get a few little nuggets someplace and go around and sell stock in that mine.
They sell the stock around here or Spokane?
Oh, yeah, there's a guy up here by the name of Pinnell. Oh, you go to You see, you go, oh yeah, you go above Harvard, and can't think of the name of that creek you go up, but you go up there, you go up on the side of Gold Hill, he had a mine up there, and he sold a lot of stock in that mine. A lot of guys put a lot of money in that goddamn mine. I don't, never did mind anything. They all lost their money. Old Pinnell was the only one that made any money out of it. He sold stock and took the money and got the heck out of the country.
He never worked it after he sold the stock?
Well, not much. I don't think he done much work. He had a crew up there working, digging a hole back in, and he went selling stock in it. But he had gold to show you, but I kind of found out that gold didn't come out of Gold Hill. He had some gold bag ices from Nevada and Oregon, and he'd show you gold by guys, and oh, that guy suckered on it. I didn't. He tried to get me, but he didn't make it.
How much would he get from a person? How much would...
Well, depending on how much stock you bought.
How much they wanted, huh?
Yeah, he'd tell you all the stock you wanted. But I don't know what it was a share now, something like $5 a share or something. You buy so many shares. No, the old guy used to own this place right here above this house above me here, Washington, old George Washington. By gosh, it about broke him up in business. He was just so sure he's going to get rich in that, you know. He just about broke himself up in business by his talking. So, gold's getting dour. They're going to start mining gold now. And I hope they get it around or even buy some gold. You ever have your hand on a $20 gold piece? Never did.
I've had a couple little pieces of gold from the creeks in my hands, but nothing but.
Oh, it used to be down in Oregon. Oh, that's back in about 24. I was down there, I guess it was. And heck, you'd take your paycheck in and cash it every weekend, and by gosh, you'd probably get maybe two $20 gold pieces. $10 gold piece is about the size of a dime. Yeah, I used to have $20 gold piece in my pocket, dime, $10, $5, $5 gold pieces. They're just like any other money, they just slip through your fingers.
Well, I'll bet if people could have gotten a hold of that guy, they would have given him a pretty hard time.
Well, you couldn't really prove nothing. No, he had a mine and it was all legitimate. Couldn't prove nothing against him. And what the hell if he did? He didn't really have anything to sue him for. I don't think there's any comeback. It's just like all other mine adventures, just like old Barnum Bailey says, there's a sucker at every daggone one of his teeth to say.
Yeah.
I forget how he called it. What did old Barnum say on that? What was his saying?
I don't remember, but I know just what you mean.
Oh, let me see.
There
was a sucker born every minute.
That's it.
That's it. There's a sucker born every minute. I guess. Now you get stuck out. I got stuck out of mine. $100 worth. And had a bike of mine up here by Avon. Oh, it was real mica. It had a hole dug in there, and you get big chunks of mica that thick, you know, and it looked like a surefire thing. So I stuck $100 in that. A lot of guys did. I wasn't the only one. But the darn outfit, they sold stock in, and they just kind of pulled it up. That was the end of it. Oh, they threatened to sue, but he, never done anything about it, I don't know. Another company took it over and went over it and processed a bunch of mica out of it. And mica got so it didn't have no price on it anymore. They come out with manufactured stuff. But all they use it for is like insulators. Mica is a good insulator in electrical appliances.
And they replaced that?
I think they got a replacement for it now. Some kind of damn stuff they build. Anyway, mica just didn't have no value, so.
Was this guy a local that had the mine?
No, I don't know where he come from.
Was the mine up near Mica Mountain? Or was
no.
it near
You know
the
where Deary is?
Yep.
That mountain they call Bud Hill?
Yep.
It's right on the back of that. You kind of go in north of Deary, and you go in the back part of the mine. That's where the mica mine was, right there on Bud Hill. Yeah, that's where it was. Oh, it looked good. It was all right. It was, I don't know. Anybody that hasn't got stuck by their own mining stock, he hasn't been very much of an old-timer. Everybody got stuck on sometime. I know my dad got old stock. Mining stock is worthless. I had words around here the other night.
Yeah, most of the folks, though, they around here, they didn't. They, when you were homesteading, you didn't mine, too.
No, there wasn't too much mining went on. My dad first started, that's the first thing he done to come out here was mine up on Gold Hill.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's late raised in Kansas. A couple of his friends come out here, and, they prospect a little on Gold Hill, and they found a little gold, and they wrote back, and my dad and their brother, the three brothers, two of them come out and one stay back, so they going to get rich out here on gold, so thank I say. My dad and the other brother come back out here. They had quite a system. Got to pay top dollar to get anything done from your neighbors nowadays.
Wonder why it changed.
Oh boy, I guess it changed.
I mean, I wonder why.
Oh, greed, I guess. Just like the whole United States changed, it's greed. Everybody after that other dollar or something, I don't know what it is, jealousy. Seems to be the thing, by gosh, if you can outsmart somebody else now and beat him out of something, that's a big deal. Used to call it crooks to do that, now it's just a big deal to just gyp somebody out of something for nothing. But, yeah. Nah, this company is a funny outfit, just pop that. You ever been to Elk River? Well, way back when I was a young fella, they built a mill up there, sawmill, had three bandsaws. And then they rebuilt that mill and they electrified the whole thing. Well, timber all around up there. Well, you know, the timber they're hauling from there down in that country down here now. But they had that mill all electrified, it's the most modern mill in the Northwest. And everybody was up there, they went building homes, you know, and they thought they had to live there forever, all that timber on that one little mill. And by gosh, I don't think it run 3 years all at once, they shut it down and tore it down and moved it out. Left guys stuck up there with nice homes. I guess they hauled some of them homes out to Moscow, sold them for a little or nothing. Some of them moved out to Moscow and they moved around the country. But that's just what pilots can do. You can't trust them as far as a little bit of tail.
Well, why'd they do that?
I don't know. It just didn't make sense. It, timber there, they tore the mill out. And they had a railroad built right into, well, the Milwaukee Railroad run right into Elk River. It just don't make sense what they do, but that's what they done. Everybody thought they were setting for life there, you know. There could be plenty of work there the rest of their lives. And they went and built some nice homes and fixed things up. All of a sudden, they got orders to shut that mill down. And not only that, but they tore it down and moved it out. Then went hauling the logs clear from there, clear down to Lewiston and down here. Don't make sense. Anyway, that's what they done. Yeah, they used to have just old dirt roads. And they didn't have no grades, you know, they didn't grade the daggone roads. They'd go down a hill, up a hill, down a hill, up a hill, all the way, you know, clear up to Bowl and on the Elk River, same way. And I had some friends, kids that used to chase around, and they moved up the Elk River. This old man got a job up there. And I think I had a bicycle. So I made my mind one Sunday morning, I was going to Elk River to see them kids. Oh, it was about 60 miles, I guess, the way the old road used to run. By gosh, I started out that Sunday morning, and it was just about time of getting dark at night. I pulled into Elk River on a bicycle. But I had that first time I ever had the bum. I could have had money with me. I could have stopped in Bogle to get something to eat. But from Elk River, Bogle to Elk River, it was just a jungle all the way through. There was no civilization whatever, about 25 miles, I guess, through there. It was just a jungle. And I didn't want to get caught in that jungle in the dark. So I didn't take time in Bogle to get anything to eat. And I know I got up there, and they was mining up on the hill on that Neva Mountain there. I don't know what they was mining for, but they had a mine up there. And they was letting their damn dredges all go into the creek, you know, and that water just running yellow. And it's hot in the middle of the day I go through there. Gosh, I got thirsty and thirsty and thirsty. So, my gosh, I didn't want to drink that damn water, you know. I finally went up along the creek there, and I got pretty quick the bridge went across it and started up that mountain. That was the end of the line. I guess I had to get a drink. So I went down, and I took a pretty good swig of that old yellow water. I went back on the back and wheeled my bike across the bridge right on the other side of the sign that says fresh water. Nice spring right there. Oh, boy. Well, I had to take a good drink of that to wash that little mud out of me. It wasn't 5 years that road down here, but I guess it just went out across the river, just a turn there. There's a sign there says fresh water, spring water. I tried to take a swig of that darn old rusty water. And I wheeled up the mountain. I had to walk and push the bicycle all the way up to what they call Neva Mountain. Got pretty up close to it, and I ran across Huckleberry. I was getting pretty daggone lank. I hadn't anything deep, so I left home. So anyway, I stopped alongside the road there and picked a bunch of huckleberries to eat them. You know, you can eat huckleberries and get hungrier all the time. But anyway, I filled up pretty good with huckleberries, and I went on up the hill pretty close to the top, and I come across two or three cars parked there. People from Milk River out there picking huckleberries. So I got one guy, he was just packing up his load his cart to get ready to go home. So I asked him if he had anything left to eat. I said, I would buy it. I wasn't bumming, I'd buy it. He wanted to know where I was from. I told him, well, you said, come up from there today? I said, yeah. He said, you need something to eat. So he got his grub box out and gave me a couple sandwiches. Boy, I just new lease on life. But after I got top of the hill, it was practically all downhill in Delta River, you know. I just sailed in Delta River, nothing flat. That's the first time I ever had the bum. Oh, I didn't figure on bumming. I had to pay it, but he didn't take no money. Kind of amused a darn kid to ride a bicycle that far one day. Anyway, I rode her up there and hung up about a week out, and then I rode her back home again. Huh. Nowadays, I got a kid can't even ride a bicycle near the town, Mike. We gotta have a motorcycle. Yeah.
What did you do when you that week you spent there?
Played around with their neighbor kids. Just horsed around. That was a week or three or four days. I don't know how long it was. I stayed there a few nights anyway, I know that. That was right after World War I. I know that one of the guys come back from the war in Germany, married a French girl. And they was living there in town. I know the friends up there, they tell me about that French woman. Well, I didn't have no idea what the hell a French woman looked like, so I just had to see her. So they had them old buildings, woodsheds, you know. And we got down, we sneaked around there and laid there and watched. So finally she come out, and she looked like any other woman. I don't know what I was looking for. She just looked like any other woman. But because she's a French woman, I don't know what I was looking for, but she had to be something different. I was pretty disappointed when she looked like any other one. Yeah. I don't know. Funny how small the world is, though. I know one time it was up Yellowstone Park. And we watched one of them bubbling springs there, and they had a kind of a railing around it there, and I leaned against the railing, the old fellow was standing there. I bet there was 50,000 people in that park that day, all scattered all over. A big crowd everywhere you go, you know. And I was standing there, and finally I got talking to that guy. He wanted to know where I was from. I told him, Princeton down here. Oh, you are. He says, want to know if I knew Pete Packy and John Lynn Hart, a bunch of them? I said, yeah. I said, they're down here yet. And come to find out, he'd worked for the company. His job was building these bunkhouses for the logging outfits, you know, along the road, building my own railroad cars, you know. That was his job working for potlatches, building bunkhouses. And another time, I was going back to Kansas, little town there, just a little burg at that time, I guess it's a pretty nice place now. It's Fort Collins, Utah, Colorado. It's just a little one service station town. I drove down there, and a woman come out and pumped some gas for me and seen my Idaho license. So, oh, she said, you're from Idaho. I said, yeah. Well, she said, I have a girlfriend that lives in Idaho. So she married a guy by the name of Frank Off. Wanted to know if I knew him. I said, yeah. It's a crow flies about a mile and a half just right over the hill here is where they lived. Just because it's Idaho, they could live in Boise, you know. But I was from Idaho, so I just had to know that girlfriend. It happened to me, I knew him, but I got you. Small world. Yeah. Yeah, when I get back there, people think of Idaho as just I don't know what they thought of it, but you should know everybody lived in Idaho, if you lived in Idaho. They didn't realize Idaho, Idaho was about 350 miles long. From the Canadian border to Utah, I guess it is about 350 miles in. Close to it.
What did you do at Potlatch? What job did you...
Oh, I worked in a sawmill. I started out picking edgings and just things like that, and I worked up, so I got on the carriages and I set ratchets and finally wound up sawing, running the head saw. You know what a sawyer is in a sawmill?
Yeah.
You've been in them.
I've been in them, but only just to look. I never worked in one.
Well, you know the guy that runs the carriage back up and down the line, you know, and saws the boards off? Well, that's the sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He loads the logs and turns the logs and calls us, got a setter, but now they got a modern bank. Now they haven't got no carriage riders on them now down here. But at that time he had, when I first started in, he had what I call a dogger and a setter, two men on a carriage. And the sawyer's the one that runs the carriage up and down, turns the logs, and nigger. You know what a nigger is?
No.
Well, that's what they call the coon. It's a rod with teeth on it. Got cup teeth like this hanging out on it. About three, four teeth down.
Yeah.
And it's set down there, sets on two cylinders, steam cylinders. And it's set down there and you run your log back over like this. Well, then you want to turn that log, you just pull it, run the nigger. Nigger comes up and turns that log over. Then goes back down the hole.
Uh-huh. And
that's what they call a nigger. And of course, they got different kinds. They got Simons and Turners there. They turn the log with a hill nigger like they had down here. It just turns the log that way all the time, turns it over. And Simons and Turner is a nigger. It's got a hook on it. You throw that hook over on top of the log and jerk the log back.
Uh-huh.
And then they got the loaders. All that does is pull the log back, and the loaders come up and shove the log back up against the carriage. That's what they call a Simpson turn. They use them down the coast on them big logs.
Mm-hmm.
They got them big logs there, boy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't
I've
believe.
Seen them. I've seen them.
You've seen them big logs?
I've seen what they left of them, what they still got standing. They're big.
And I was a carriage man, a setter, and I didn't know what. East is east and west is west, but I went to Portland, and of course I went and applied for a job of setting ratchets. Well, they didn't have a wasn't over by a dog, but they had three men on that cage, and then a great big log cage, or I don't know, as long as this house is wide here, I guess. And they had blocks on the cage about that high. About as high as it was down here, about that, you know, but then they saw a little log down here. Well, the third dog, that track run, they opened the doors up in the end of the mill, and the track run right out over the Willamette River. And I didn't know it. I got on there, and of course, the dogs were all kind of relics, you know. You had to pull the pin, set the dog up, then put the pin in, and pull down a lever, and the dog along. Well, down here, they had the what they call bark dogs. They had a bunch of teeth in that looked like this, all down the block, a whole bunch of them. You just pull down a lever, and them teeth would grab the log, you know, and hold it. Anyway, that way up there. And I used these rigs down here fast. And you had to hang on to something all the time. And them rigs are big logs, they go slow, you know, and you can cut loose and walk one end of the cage to the other. And like one of your blocks is here, you had a dog, and you had another fire that wall away. You'd walk over and undog it. But my gosh, I'd been hanging on this cage long. I just cut a little loose. Just instincts just made you hang on. Anyway, I had a hell of a time. But the first log went out, the cage was sitting there empty. And so they run the rig back, I way out over the, them logs is 40 feet long, I guess. Maybe longer than that. I don't know how long they were. They run straight out over the end of the mill. And the track was built out in the open air out there. Well, I didn't know that was going to happen. I was on the tail end. What they call the second dogger. And so got out there, they just about time the whistle blew, some guy come down, open the doors up in the end of the mill. And way we went out, threw out over the river. I looked down in the river right down below me. And of course they had the log deck out there where the log come rolling down. Even the kind of, like I say, the blocks is only about that high and nothing between me and the damn river. And I just knew them damn blocks wouldn't stop that log, you know, I knew it just come rolling out over the top of it, a big devil. I bet the damn thing was 8 foot thick. So I say my hair stand up, but them blocks stopped it all right. Huh. Oh boy, I really had for Idaho. That's no fool. You just magic back. I said something wasn't expecting that, you know.
Yeah.
My guy, they opened that window up and the way we went out, threw out over the river out there, nothing but a track, you know, just scaffolding. Nothing behind me, I guess, was that log had come over that box, right? I'd have to make a high dive. So I guess, but the block stopped it all right. But I worked a half a day and that was enough for me.
Huh.
A bunch of dudes.
And what did you do?
Oh, I went and got a little job in construction. Yeah. I went and got a job on construction. I stayed on construction for the rest of the holiday down there. Working on them tall buildings. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. No, these cages down here in this mill, you know, hell, they just fly up and down the track, heck, you know, you're on steam, what they have a shotgun feed. You know, shotgun feed is a great big cylinder. Well, if the track was 40 feet long, well, that cylinder would be 40 feet long, you see. And the rod was passing onto the cage, and this piston was in the cylinder, and that piston would travel up there 40 feet in that cylinder, you know. And you had steam and throttle on both ends. You give it the steam on this end and push the cage back, and then just reverse it and steam it shoots on this end, and the other would be exhaust. Just go back and forth there like a shotgun feed.
Huh.
And you down here, you know, back guys, you turn the logs on the fly and load them on the fly. You never, if you had to stop the rig and turn a log, you had to goof up some way. Oh no, you just go back there and turn them logs on the fly and the cage never stopped.
Huh.
Down there, you know, them big logs, well, hell, they had to, they feed through the sauce load. And I don't know, Don Redwood was down there in Scotia, California. I went into a mill one time, I was down there and saw them. And man, like guys, they'd bring logs in there as high as the ceiling, you know, thick. They'd look like a block of wood. They were so damn thick, and a 16-foot log, they was about as thick as they were as long. You know, looked like a damn block. But that's that redwood.
Right.
well, I don't know, I see the train coming there at Eureka, and they'd have just one log on a box car, on a flat car, and maybe the next log would have maybe two or three logs on it. But there's just a lot of cars on that train, just one big log on it, on a flat car. You've seen the redwoods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Well, I don't know how they are now, but...
What's left of them.
What's left of them. I know the first time I've seen them, oh, they'd been cleaning land off. They had some machine out there. They'd pull them stumps out. They'd log it off there. But you could see the forest down ahead of you there. I guess that was reserved. They couldn't log only so far down, and that was the end of it. But anyway, oh, the sun was shining bright, you know, and I was batting right along, and the highway run right into that forest. Why, even the guys, I had to climb on the brakes. See, and the tracks would go in there, and you couldn't see nothing. Just almost dark in there, you know. So them trees are tall, though sunlight could get in there. Sun couldn't get down there at all. And big ferns growing out there, taller than you was, you know, ferns all over. You'd walk up one of them trees, my gosh, it made you feel like you was about that high. And we went and seen two trees. One right beside the other. One was General Sherman and the other was General Grant. I think. The name of the two trees, and they had a fence built around them. You've probably seen them too.
I haven't seen them, but I heard of them.
And we went and looked at that. And they had the sign up there giving the scale of them logs, you know, the biggest one. And we wrote it down. And so anyway, it was a tremendous scale, 300 and some thousand board feet in one tree. So I come back up here one night and was down the mill and eating dinner down in the pond and talking about them. I said, well, I said, I seen one tree down there by a guy. I said, there's more lumber scale than this damn mill was put out in 8 hours. Oh, Christ, I thought I was spreading on. I said, give a damn. I said, there's one tree down there. It's got more lumber scale than this damn sawmill down here. It'll put out in 8 hours. And I got the figures right. I said, across from the other day, we were looking for something. I wrote them down. And it's a fact, like they had 300 and some thousand log scale. And this mill do damn good to put up 250,000, you know, good day's run. Saw hundreds and hundreds of logs. But that tree was 23 and a half feet, something like that, through it. From 6 inches, 8 to 10 inches, something by the ground. It was 23 and a half feet right through the log.
I guess so that our white pine here is a wood that can't be beat for being a
oh yeah white pine
good wood.
Good, yeah, white pine. Yeah, it's good wood. It's getting awful scarce though. Yeah, pretty scarce finding white pine anymore. But anyway, now that's how big that tree was. Then I got a picture around here. I had an old Dodge 4x4 sedan. And a tree down there you could drive your car through, you know. Yeah, I got a picture of my old Dodge sitting in that tree. And that tree was hollow. The fire had burned it. And it was just a chimney right through the middle. And yet the outside of it was green. Yeah, there's limbs on it. It was a green tree. But then it just like you get inside and look up, it's just like a little stovepipe. And you drive in there and you can open all four doors on a sedan. And there was fire near that wall, a tree on both sides of the car, you know, where they had this whole chisel through where the road goes through there. There was enough tree left to be fire near that wall on both sides of it, yeah, holding that tree up. Yeah. You just wouldn't believe it till you see it.
Seems like most people don't hardly know about the kinds of forests that we used to be around here. They never got the attention, but they're beautiful, as what I've seen in the pictures.
I don't know. I guess they got that pretty well logged off for old LBJ's wife, what they call her.
Ladybird.
Ladybird, yeah, Ladybird. She went back there and put on quite a drive to save the redwoods. Mm-hmm. And she went out there. They got a park down there now. They can't go and cut. Sawmills fought heck out of it, but Why, what are you going to do, log the laptop off like old Ronald Reagan did? If you've seen one, you've seen them all. That was a crazy dark place. And when I was down there, you drove into that forest. And I don't know, it seemed like I drove through there mile on mile on mile. And the road, if a big tree was there, they wouldn't cut the tree out of the road. They'd drive back the road right around the tree. You just take it on down through there. They wouldn't cut a tree down. Maybe a small one or something they had to, but the road just snaked around through there all the way down. And come to a tree, they wouldn't cut that tree down. Make a straight, they'd go around the tree. That was through the old highway, but I suppose now they got probably a four-lane highway down through there now. Straight as a string. Yeah, imagine they got a four-lane highway down through there. But wait, what is that? Just two-lane road, McAdam Road. And my gosh, we come to a tree, it went around it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to see it again. I'd rather remember it the way it was. I have no desire to go back and see what's left. But anyway, we went for miles and miles and miles through that forest.
Well, how long, do you know how long it was that they had the virgin timber here?
Before what?
The virgin timber here, the first growth, before they started having to start cutting the second growth?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It lasted
well,
long.
Well, that was all first growth timber that took off around here. That's when I was a kid. That was all original old growth timber.
Yeah.
And when they got that logged off, that was about it around here. Everything else was around here was all second growth. I don't know of any place around here that got any old timber anymore, any original, what they call the old growth timber. The big old pine tree right down below my barn, that's old growth. That's bull pine, that's a typical bull pine down there. That's a pretty good sized tree you get out to the butt. Yeah, it's a big tree. Yeah, that's one of the oldest trees around this neck of the woods. That tree right down there. It's an old original. And that willow out there is quite a tree. You went out there?
Mm-hmm. It's
a
beauty.
You ought to go to the window and take a look at how big that damn thing is.
I can see it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it spreads out all over. I bet it covers a half acre. You ought to go to the window where you can see it all. I got to take a look at that crazy thing. Yeah. You get out under it, boys, it's like under a canopy when it's all leafed out. When it gets all leafed out, back, I just only about half leafed out now, it will be when it gets plumb leafed out. But you can go out there, back, and them limbs will be hanging down, it's almost dark under that thing. Yeah. And that willow is about, probably 80 years old. I can remember it when it was just a small bush, you know, just a small, when I was a kid. Old road used to go by here and I used to go by horseback. And people lived here when the son had TB. And they keep him out in the fresh air. They moved him and made a bed for him under that willow tree out there. But it was just a small tree then. And I used to stop there and BS with him when he was laying out there. He finally died with it, TB. But that's just when I was a kid, so it's a pretty good sized bush, so I might have been about 80 years old. So I can make a rough guess at it. I know it's older than I am, and I'm 70. So it's been there a long time. Oh, I know Dr. Bill, you know, they used to have what they call yellow pine. And it's a species all by itself, really, but down at the mill, they call it ponderosa. And that includes old bull pine, or they had another pine about halfway between that and yellow. It was straighter and slimmer. Didn't have heavy limbs on like that one. They used to call them bastard pine. I don't know why, but it's bastard pine. Then they had the yellow pine. And I know my brother-in-law, he was one of the big bosses down at the mill for years. He's retired now, but he argues that bull pine and even bastard pine are all yellow trees. Yellow pine, when they get grilled up, when they get full growth, why, they'd be yellow pine. I like, pop the cock. Tell me that old tree down there would be a yellow pine. You can tell them yellow pine, just even in the woods, the bark's yellow. And there's all the difference in the world. So he finally asked me, he said, well, did you ever see a young yellow pine? I said, damn right, I got some on my place. I said, trees about so big around, you just look down through the woods, and they're just yellow, you know. And so I told him, sometime you get a chance, by gosh, I'll show you a young yellow pine, by gosh. And I said, there's bull pine and bastard pine all around them. And I said, there's yellow pine. I said, you'll have to admit, boy, that they're a different species entirely. Well, you take a yellow pine. They used to have a pitch gum, you know. And you take old yellow pine, you find a good hard chunk of that pitch. It's dried up, and you can chew that, boy. That was good chewing. Man, that was gum. That's what those kids used to have for gum. Them. Get out and find a yellow pine tree with that gum on it. You can just chew and chew it, you know, and never chew the flavor out of it. But you go down and get some pitch off one of these bull pines, and boy, it'll crack you. Oh, boy. And then the pine cones are all together different. I don't know, you remember when you were around the woods. Of course, you're not old enough to remember back that far, but pine squirrels, they go up in them big yellow pine trees, and they cut them pine cones off, and they'd fall down, and then they come down, and you'd see a whole bunch of that pine cone, where they just tore it all to pieces, getting them seeds out. You see the pine cone there on the ground, just all tore up. Well, they'd after them seeds. I used to tear them up and eat them seeds, too. They could eat them. You take a big old pine cone, yellow pine, and they made them fly. They got a wing on them, the seed has, and then the seed right down the butt of it here. Yeah, but then when the pine cone gets plumb right, that thing will break loose and go flying through the woods, you know, the wind will just blow them out. And old pine squirrels, they used to hoard them for winter. Huh. Oh, boy. Yeah, they'd hoard them things, they'd forget half the place where they hoard them. And anyway, I know the Forest Service one time, I didn't think I was right, sent crews out in the woods finding them squirrel hoards in order to get seed to plant forests with. Yeah, they used to have people running around the woods trying to find them squirrel where they catch the seed and rob them. That's a dirty trick. They would work all summer. Of course, they probably had a hell of a lot more catches than they ever could eat, but then they just work all summer long catching that goddamn seeds.
But, so the bull pine seed was different.
Yeah, I never did see a bull pine or a squirrel. I don't know if there's any seed, I guess there is, but they're so damn tight and they're sticky. Oh boy. Yellow pine, when the pine cone get ripe, they'd spread out, and you'd get down there, you know, and you'd dig them little, I don't know what you'd call it, part of a stem that sticks out, but the seeds would be down inside of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just break them off, and you'd get the seeds out. Just break them back and shake them, the seeds would fall out. Oh, I used to shell them out and get a handful and eat them. I can see why the squirrels like them. It's good.
I'm going to try that myself.
You've tried it?
No, I'm gonna.
I don't know where you're gonna find a yellow pine anymore, though.
Well, I'll look. I look at trees. I like to.
My gosh, boy, I tell you. They're awful scarce. I don't know why it happened. Why they just, when they cut the old growth down, that seemed to be the end of it. I don't know why. That the only place I know is any yellow pines up on my place, up on the other place up there. It's just a few trees. And I know they're yellow pine. But I don't know why they never reseeded and come back like the other pine did.
What's the difference in the appearance of the tree between a yellow and a bull if you're just looking at the tree straight?
Well, thickness of the bark, the color of the bark. And then, of course, if you got a tree cut down, yellow pine will have the heart. There'll be about that much sap on a big yellow pine log, about that much sap right around the house. The rest of it was all heart. It's just about so much sap. And then you take these bastard pines, they're halfway between a bull and a yellow pine, but they'll have a heart about that big around and so much sap.
I mean, a bigger heart and a lot more sap, too.
Yeah, it won't be a bigger heart, but it'll be a smaller heart, but a lot more sap. And you take this old level down here, if you cut it down, it'll have a heart about that big around the rest of the sap.
Mostly sap and,
yeah, mostly sap,
and little heart.
Just a small heart, and the rest of the wood's all sapwood. But a yellow pine, they got about, a great big log 3 foot through, but have a sap about that wide on the rest of those heartwood. And then you get one on a carriage, you take a little bull pine, and you saw off one slab and turn the log over, it'll shake the whole mill. The same size as the yellow pine, you can turn it over and be light as a feather compared to that old bull pine. Yeah.
The needles about the same, though?
Huh?
The needles look the same?
Well, I just can't say.